Psalm 134, this is one of these songs of ascents or degrees. And I think that the idea is that this is Hezekiah's response to being granted another 15 years of life, because the 15 of them match the 15 years. But when you look at them, out of the 15 of them, four of them are by David, one's by Solomon, and the other 10 are anonymous, but one assumes by Hezekiah. And so those 10 by Hezekiah would reflect the 10 degrees by which the sundial went backwards. The sundial went back 10 degrees to reflect how Hezekiah was to be given another 15 years. So they're anonymous, possibly because Hezekiah later turned away from faith in the last 15 years of his life, or perhaps because he was trying to be humble and not put his name on things. Anyway, they're used later on as the songs that should be sung when you ascend to Zion. Now, when you read about going up to Jerusalem, it's always going up to Jerusalem or going up to Zion. The idea is that whatever point of the compass you're coming from, you are going up to Zion. That is a very common Hebraism that you find throughout the Old Testament. So, look, praise Yahweh, all you servants of Yahweh who stand by night in Yahweh's house. Well, the only feast that was kept at night was the Passover. So I think the idea is that this is sung by the pilgrims as they're on their way up to Zion to keep the Passover. And perhaps the Lord Jesus would have sung this when he first, as a child, really young man, went up to Zion to keep the Passover. So all you servants of Yahweh are to sing this, verse 2, lift up your hands in the sanctuary, praise Yahweh. Well, that could be a specific command to the priests, or the idea could be that all God's people were to enter into the sanctuary, into the holy place, to praise Yahweh. It's looking ahead to a time when the sanctuary was not going to be off limits to ordinary non-Levites. Verse 3, may Yahweh bless you from Zion, even he who made heaven and earth. So verse 2, you are to lift up your hands, you are to praise or bless God, and may Yahweh bless you. So then the idea is of the mutuality that's possible between God and his people. We bless God, he blesses us, but we bless him because he first blessed us. And it's this sense of mutuality which you will find developing in your life as you grow in Jesus, as you grow in your relationship with God, that he moves here and you move there. And there is this sense of sort of ongoing two-way mutuality as you grow, because this is God's aim, relationship. Not simply knowing a pack of theology and putting ticks in boxes, but ongoing relationship, that is by its nature mutual and two-way. And yet, the idea is, I think, that Yahweh is in Zion, and out of there, he, the creator of heaven and earth, blesses you from Zion. And perhaps the idea is that there could have been, at the time of the restoration, exiles coming, wanting to keep the Passover, singing these songs as they came up from Babylon up to Jerusalem to restore the city, to keep the feasts. And ultimately, if the temple vision of Ezekiel 40 to 48 had been obeyed, and I see that as commandment more than prediction, it's called the law of the house in Ezekiel 43, if they had done all those things, then the cherubim of the Shekinah glory would have returned and again dwelt in Zion. Zion is particularly the Temple Mount. And the Yahweh who made heaven and earth would be located in Zion. And so at the end of Ezekiel 48, it says, the temple and the city shall be called Yahweh Shammah. Yahweh is there. Now, that is not what happened. The majority of the exiles, when Cyrus said, look, you can go back now and I'll sponsor you, I'll give you whatever resources are needed, they chose to remain. The vast majority, unfortunately, chose to remain. There's a lot of evidence, archaeological evidence, relating to the population of the Jews in Persia at the time, and there was a huge number of them. And they were prosperous, as you see from the Book of Esther. They were in positions of authority, of power, and they were wealthy. That's why Haman wants to kill a lot of them, and he reckons that if he could do that and expropriate their property, he could give the king a huge amount of money. And unfortunately, that's why I think the Book of Esther has a sad ending, because they're so assimilated, they're so caught up in that life. But they didn't want to come to Zion and sing these songs. They were happy where they were. And the few who did go, it seems from what Haggai says and from the historical record in Ezra and Nehemiah, they returned really not to do God's work, but to carve out for themselves a bit of land and to basically have their little kingdom. They lived in their sealed houses, Haggai says. You just want to build your little farmsteads, and God's house lay in ruins. So all this wonderful situation didn't come about. The commandments of Ezekiel 40-48 were not obeyed, and therefore God's glory did not return to the temple, and therefore it was not a case of Yahweh Shammah. God, Yahweh, was not there as he could have been. And so the situation envisaged here, may Yahweh bless you from Zion, even he who made heaven and earth, the idea that the creator of heaven and earth would be personally located on the hill of Zion just didn't happen. And yet we know from Revelation that all these ideas have been rescheduled, reapplied, and reinterpreted. Finally, God himself shall dwell with men. And finally, yes, Yahweh Shammah, not only in Zion, but on the whole earth. And we shall see him. His servants shall see him. We shall see his face. He is real. God is real. God is a personal being, a real personal being, not a cloud in the atmosphere, not some idea, not some nexus of energy somewhere in outer space. God is a real personal being, and he will ultimately dwell in Zion, and he will finally bless us out of Zion, we who have blessed or praised him.